Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life podcast. My guest on today's episode is Dre White. Dre is the head boys basketball coach at Upper Scioto Valley High School in McGuffey, Ohio. USV is a tiny school in rural Northwest Ohio, and it's the second coaching stop for Dre, who's a spectacular young head coach. He had an outstanding playing career at Lima Bath High School in the Western Buckeye League and went on to play at Ohio Wesleyan University before starting his coaching career and becoming a head coach in his early 20s. I hope you enjoy my conversation today with Dre White of Upper Scioto Valley High School. Coach White, thanks for joining me today. You're having me in your office, which is not common. You and Coach Young at ONU have been able to get to the office. So this has been a long time coming. I think it's going to be a good time, but I appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and I'm excited. As you know, I listen to quite a bit and tune into you with these podcasts, the radio, all you got going on, and I think we go back on a couple different levels, so I agree. I think this will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's always a little tough for me to, and I intentionally didn't ask certain people to do it because of how long-standing a relationship is. I didn't want it to be like home cooking entirely, but I think the first time I crossed your path, you were like a little kid coming to camp at ONU. Right. I don't even remember how old you were, but I remember you being at camp and then obviously following you through your high school career. And so I'm familiar, but you're a Lima Bath High School product. Talk to me, if you would, a little bit about your early days, your high school career. We can get to where you went to college. More than anything else, I guess I want to hear you tell me a little bit about your playing experience and how it pointed you toward coaching.
Yeah, I mean, I think even going back before high school, you know, if I think back and say, if I look at my life, where did basketball come into my life? Where did that love start? And if I think way back, first time with basketball, probably at the Lima Family YMCA, I had a coach by the name of Joe Kirshner. Awesome coach, and you know, he had such an impact on me. And then, you know, further on at the Y, I had a guy, Adam Stolle, I believe that played at Capital University, and did some things with him. And you know, through those games and having coaches like that, you know, it sparked something in me. And you know, from there, it was really, you know, next step, I think, for me, from a memory standpoint, would be T-Bird basketball camp. Over with Coach Seg, and you know, playing against some of the you know, best players in the area, and having a guy like Coach Seg, and you know, that made such an impact on me. And you know, it's funny, you know, now that, you know, I'm on the other side of that and holding camps, you know, here at the high school level, you know, some of the things that were highlights for me at T-Bird basketball camp, the newsletters, things like that, or I brought those over to our camps as well. So things that, you know, those were huge things for me. You know, from there and T-Bird basketball camp, I think, you know, I was growing up even before high school. So I was in the Lima City school system before Bath through fifth grade. So I grew up a Spartan. I have to give a lot of credit to my aunt, who is Lakeisha White Sigmund, who's currently the head girls basketball coach at Lima Senior. When I was young, she was coaching at that time as well, and she invited me to be the ball boy, the manager, and that was everything for me. Just you know, she was coaching girls there. I'd go to all the practices. I would travel. I would sit on the bench, and you know, I think she gave me a ton of responsibility and made it fun. I remember very vividly, you know, leading the team out of the tunnel in the locker room, you know, running out for warm-ups, and I had the whistle out there, and we were doing the defensive chops and things like that. And so in from there, you know, not only did I see the girls' side of it, but I also saw the boys' side of Lima Senior basketball. And you know, my mom and dad were Lima Senior grads, and a lot of my family, like my aunts, so you know, growing up, we didn't really miss, especially home games, tournament games, we didn't miss any games. And I remember going to those Lima Senior games. There's pictures of me with red hair, and you know, going to see those guys like you know, Travis Walton and Willie Tisdale and Tavares Clay, Sammy V. And I'm missing a ton, but man, I remember looking up to those guys, and I watched everything that they would do. And you know, being with my aunt and being the manager, I'd go to the girls' practices, and they had two really good players there, Kobe Carlisle and then Corinne Horn, I believe, that played at BG. I remember going to those practices following them around and then staying and watching every second I could of the boys' practice before either the door shut or I got kicked out. So, you know, going to those games are very fond memories for me. I remember always going up to watch Lima Senior play. I believe it was at Liberty Benton. And I forget what it was. It may have even been Travis's senior year. I believe they lost the game they should not have lost. And I remember crying the whole way back home. My mom looks back, and I'm just in tears because I knew they lost that game. There's no more basketball. There's no more watching Travis Walton anymore. So, you know, that was huge for me in some of those early phases.
Well, Coach, you just mentioned a couple things that jump out to me. Number one is a lot of kids can say they grew up around the gym and maybe would have memories like what you talk about. But I think the difference between some people that end up in this profession and people who don't is you're filing away things that you remember as, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I think the memory piece is really good, but I've said this, and I was going to get to this later in the pod, but I'll just say it now. From the time you started coaching, look, this profession's gotten younger over time. When I got a head coaching job at 23 in 1995, 96, that wasn't very common. 23, 24, 25-year-old guys, ladies get head coaching jobs now as often as they don't.
Yeah.
But most of the time, the 23, 24, 25-year-olds that get head coaching jobs are X and O bright, are maybe motivational bright. But what they don't know is that they don't know what it means to be organized and to have a plan and to do the what some people call the extraneous things. I call the foundational things of coaching is you know having – paperwork in order, being able to organize structurally. And so when you talk about the newsletter, newspaper at T-Bird Camp, I saw you do that when you were at Ada, and I remember that it existed at T-Bird Camp. I've shared things with my son from his youth as a player. He doesn't remember that they happened, much less that you could use them again later in life, and you did that. So we'll come back to that at some point. But is it fair to say that maybe other than just loving basketball, were you thinking about the coaching side of it pretty early?
To be honest, no, I don't think I was. I mean, and maybe I was, and just not knowing it. You know, with like you said, filing away some of those types of things. And you know, when I did get that job at a fairly young age, I believe I was 22, and it was like, oh crap, what now? So it was going back and saying, you know, hey, what was fun for you? What worked? And pulling those types of things. But you know, I think, as I look back, I'm not sure there was ever a point where I was like, I want to coach. And I think plan A for me, I knew I wanted to stay around the game, stay around athletes and be around it in some aspect. You know, I think plan A for me, I wanted to be a physical therapist working with athletes, you know, rehab and staying around it that way. And I think it might have always been in the back of my mind, but there was nothing like, yes, that's what I wanted to do. And I remember right after I graduated college, after I was done at Ohio Wesleyan, Dana Kuntz called me. That was the head girls coach, Alan East, at that time. And he had an assistant spot open, which ended up being my first coaching gig. And he goes, hey, he calls, and you want to coach? And I remember very, I said, coach what? He goes, you want to come and coach girls, Alan East? And I remember telling him, no, I don't. And I know Dana. I've known Dana for quite some time. When I was at Bath, he was still coaching Allen East, and he was, you know, kind of a family friend and someone I've known for a while. He'd always come over, and when I was at Bath, saying, "Hey, you'd look good in that other color of blue, that Mustang blue." So I thought it was another one of those calls. Hey, come put on Mustang blue, and you know, he called back a few other times after that. I'm like, no. And he's like, just come to an open gym and you know, come to a skill session, you know, see what you think. And I did, and I fell in love with it. Like, I mean, that's why I continue to do with it. I fell in love with just being around the players, just the continuity, some of the experiences that I had at Ohio Wesleyan, and being able to, you know, share some of those with, you know, the younger athletes. And I'm so glad he made that phone call. I'm glad he called back again and again, and you know, invited me to that open gym. And I think here I am 10 years later.
So let's talk about that getting there. So you, the impact on you as a young person, you articulated extremely well, but eventually you become a high school player in a very good program. You're not at Lima Senior. I mean, you grew up in Spartan country, but you end up at Bath High School as a high school player. Let's talk a little bit about your career and maybe some of the more impactful or at least more memorable things from that that were, again, keeping you on the path that maybe you didn't even know you wanted to be on.
Yeah, so, you know, getting to Bath, you know, I guess even going back further, I never played any other sport. Even at a young age, I never tried soccer camp. I was never football. I never played baseball. The head coaches reached out and tried to get me to do other things other than basketball several times. I never did. So when I got to high school, it was basketball. It's the only thing I knew. It's the only thing, you know, I knew I was going to do. And I got to high school, and my freshman year, I remember being about 5'2", about 90 pounds.
That's the you I remember.
Yeah. And I think majority of that freshman year, I played a good amount of junior varsity. At the end of that year, we saw a lot of injuries, especially at the guard spot. And there came an opportunity for me to step in late in the year, tournament game, I believe. And there was me, you know, 5'3", 90 pounds. I believe I played Walpock BJ Reed. That was about 6'8", and about three of me. And I was out there, you know, trying to do the best I could. And, you know, from there, I was fortunate to, you know, have a good career at Bath, you know, playing for Coach Davis. You know, something I'll probably gonna get to later. But, you know, once you get into coaching, you quickly realize, you know, what the heck was I doing as a high school player? You know, getting into coaching, and you realize you're telling your guys the same things that Coach Davis was trying to tell you back then that you thought he was crazy for. But anyway, yeah, I mean, got to my junior, senior year, and, you know, one thing I'll say as well, I think I talked to some other guys that played in that stretch of, you know, maybe 2009 and 2015. I thought that was one of the best eras of basketball around here, and there are so many guys there that played. You know, Desi Kirkman, Dakota was in there, Martise, Taren, you know, Anton Hutchins, you know, Xavier, Trey Howard, there's so many more. Aaron Kraft was in there as well, at a really good time. And, you know, my junior senior year, you know, started getting looked at by some other schools, and then that kind of came the idea of, you know, hey, I may have an opportunity to do something I think I've always wanted to do, and that's play at the next level. And so started having conversations with Bluffton. You know, they reached out very early.
That would have been me too.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, that's where you and I, you know, have a relationship there as well. Coach Neal was awesome, and you know, always reaching out, and just good, bad games, and you know, that always meant a lot. But Ohio Northern, Heidelberg, Capital, and I think Ohio Wesleyan really was about the last school that came into the picture. And I even think it wasn't even until about tournament time. My senior year, I remember Coach DeWitt came over to Ohio Northern, I believe in the districts. We were playing Elida. I believe that was the first time he had really seen me play. But at Bath, knew some others that were currently playing at Ohio Wesleyan, and said, hey, you know, come check this out. And I did, and you know, really fell in love with it. So, I ended up Ohio Wesleyan, had a phenomenal experience there as well.
Well, and the Wesleyan thing is one I want to really get into, because obviously we're in an era now where it doesn't feel like very many people end up where they start. And the concept of choosing a college and getting it right, I think seems pretty foreign now, but I've heard you reflect on your college experience. I don't feel like you ever had a doubt. Like it was the right place for you from Jump Street.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, and, you know, going back to high school, you know, Bluffton was definitely, if I had to, you know, top three, it was Bluffton, it was Heidelberg, it was Ohio Wesleyan. I think I was set on Heidelberg up through when Ohio Wesleyan came up into the picture. I took a visit at Heidelberg, loved it. Coach Golson was the head coach there at Heidelberg, and still have a good relationship with Coach Golson. I thought the world of him and still do, and you know, how he always reached out. He was always asking, you know, how's the family, how's your mother, and that meant a lot to me. But went to Ohio Wesleyan, and I'm like, man. And I remember leaving campus with that visit with my mom. She goes, what do you think? And I was like, I think that's it. And it was. And that was, you know, shortly after I reached back out to Coach DeWitt and said, hey, you know, if you have me, I think this is home for me. And yeah, I mean, everything, a good chunk of, you know, what's kind of molded me into me as a coach and me as a person to come from Ohio Wesleyan. I had a phenomenal experience. Just the camaraderie, the teammates, the experiences that I shared with those guys. You know, we were in a unique situation. One of the reasons I probably loved it is I was in a house that's pretty much all the basketball and football guys. I mean, so we did everything together, on and off the floor, and you know, we had a great time. But those relationships, and you know, as you know, brotherhood and those types of things have been a big part of, you know, what we want to do as a program and as a staff. And but you know, that originated there. And I was also a part of some really good teams. I remember coming in as a freshman. I don't know how many All-Americans I played with at Ohio Wesleyan, but it was a lot. And I was just trying to fit in and stay out of their way. And, I mean, I probably played with, in my 4 years at one point or another, 5, 6 All-Americans, I believe. And you know, a lot of them got into coaching. Andy Winters, head coach at Otterbein right now. Seth Clark was just named not long ago the head coach at Bluffton. And I have several friends that are coach at the high school level as well. So we still connect and go back and forth. And, you know, if I'm getting ready for a game, I'm seeing something I'm not sure of, you know, being able to reach out to Andy or, you know, my assistant at the time was also Nate Conley that's at Manchester, reaching out to those guys. Hey, you know, you got any ideas for this? You know, this zone's pretty nasty. What do you got for me? But, yeah, I mean, again, was a part of some really good teams. I was a part of 3 20-win seasons at Ohio Wesleyan. I believe at that time, I think my senior, the group of seniors I graduated with, I think at one point was had the most wins as a player at Ohio Wesleyan. And then that didn't last long, so I think the year after me, then that senior class took that award. And I think the year after that senior class took that award, which is a great thing. But, yeah, the success that we've seen and just how we went about it and seeing that and making that translate to, you know, what I'm doing now. But, you know, we made it to the NCAA tournament 3 different times. We won the conference my junior year. My junior year, which would have been the 2012-2013 team, that was probably the best team, you know, I had ever been a part of. Not only from a talent standpoint, we were very talented, but just so connected. And we lost that year in the NCAA tournament. To a team, Cabrini, I believe made it to the national championship. It was either Final Four or national championship game.
I know it was Final Four for certain.
And we were in that game. We had that game, and you know, we still reflect on it. We could have pulled that game out. What was ahead for us? And it was just a special group. So yeah, I mean, huge part of you know, again, who I, you know, I think I am, what I want the program to be about.
So I'm going to ask a couple of questions, one that's basketball related and one that's not, based on a couple of things you just said. The first thing is, when you talk about playing at Wesleyan, I don't remember if Scott Cooper was there for part of your time, but Coop was an assistant there, went on to become a head coach.
Yep.
Nate Conley was an assistant there, went on to become a head coach.
Yep.
Seth Clark played with you. He's now a head coach.
Yep.
And then Andy played. He's now a head coach. That's not even to mention – Axelrod played with you. He was a college assistant. Fellhaber played with you. He was a college assistant. Like, there was no way you thought coaching was coming down the pike. Like, it's all you guys do.
And we talk about it all the time. And at that time, I don't know if any of us really thought that's what we were going to do. I don't know. And just how it all kind of, you know, panned out and for each of us. I think, you know, whether we knew it was coaching or not, I think we knew we wanted to stay connected to the game and some way, and I think that was, you know, that's how it worked itself out for us. But yeah, I mean, we talk about that all the time. You know, the amount of assistants that end up being head coaches, the amount of players that are now either assistants or head coaches at some level, was pretty special. And I think, again, that might go back to some of the success that we saw through some of those years.
So, pretty staggering, and I've always been blown away by it. But the longer I do this, and the more conversations I have, I mean, Coop's been on the pod, Conley's been on the pod, Winters has been on the pod, DeWitt's been on the pod, Axelrod was on the pod. So you just start to realize that the connection was pretty special. And look, that's not typical. That's not the college experience for a lot of guys. But I also wanted to touch base with you about the original decision. I know we've talked about it, but I want to touch base in one particular area. Like, you're remarkably close to your mom.
Yeah.
Was there ever a concern with going, quote unquote, away from home for that amount of time when you guys have such a special relationship?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, my mom rocked for me. You know, just the epitome of hard work and perseverance and figuring things out. And, you know, she didn't cut me any slack when I was growing up. You know, awesome relationship, both mom and dad. You know, my dad was more, he'd take me to the court and play me one-on-one and beat me up a little bit and not let me win for a long time. And, cause he was a good player as well. And mom was the one, you know, once I was playing or once dad did beat me up on the court, I went and, you know, went home and had excuses or pouted about it, or whether it's playing against my dad or whether it's, you know, a high school game, she'd be like, she's the one, well, you better get back out there and figure it out. I mean, so that's just how she was, you know, and I thank her for that now, because I'm kind of the same way. But yeah, I mean, going back to the question of, you know, was that a factor with mom? Yeah, I'm sure she would love to see me at Bluffton, just because it was right up the road for her and she can make a lot of games. But I think I could have been about anywhere and she still wouldn't missed a game. I mean, between my high school playing career and my college playing career, and, you know, I bet she only missed definitely less than a handful of games. I could count those on one hand for sure. You got to think Ohio Wesleyan, you know, playing in the NCAC. There's some trips there.
Yeah.
You know, going over to Allegheny, going over to Wabash, DePaul. And when we made the tournament, you know, we played in Memphis. We played up in, we played up in Minnesota, Wisconsin. I mean, we went all over the place. She didn't miss any games. And, you know, also again, traveling across Ohio, Indiana, you know, wherever in the winter months, you got all the snow. I remember, you know, her following the charter bus back to games. And so, yeah, that was a huge part of it. And she didn't miss anything. And, you know, she's still like that. You know, as a coach, she's always here. She's got the same seat. She doesn't miss. She knows what she's talking about. So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, you and I crossed paths then again about that 2013-2014 time frame, maybe between your junior and senior year, because I had gotten into high school coaching again. You were in the gym a lot, yeah, with us. If you wouldn't mind, I guess just touch on, when did you start to make some comparison or some maybe contrast in your mind about the coaches you had played for and start piecing the other things that you thought were valuable? I'd ask you to directly compare Dewey and Double D, but I mean, you played for some different personalities and different styles of play.
Yeah. And I played for two really, really good coaches. You know, Doug's had a heck of a career and, you know, regional appearances and, you know, the career that he had with Coach Lozier as well. You know, I think the world of those guys, and, I'm super thankful, like I said, getting into coaching, that they still think the world of me. And we have, because as I look back to high school player, I'm like, oh my goodness, I was, yeah. So that's been great. And then, you know, Coach DeWitt as well, you know, I think he hit 400 wins, I believe, a couple years ago. So he's probably working on 500 wins. So, yeah, I mean, you know, as far as when did I, you know, start comparing and contrasting of what those guys, why those guys were successful, what I saw as a player and what I wanted to be as a head coach, you know, right away, you know, you get that head coaching job. And like I said, that, you know, I got the AIDA job in 2016, 2017, I believe. And that was after I spent 2 years over with Dana Allen East and, you know, had a lot of fun with Dana. And I, again, he reached out to me about, you know, taking that assistant position, and I did. And he also reached out to me, made the phone call and said, hey, AIDA's looking for a head coach. And okay, like, you know, still didn't really, why are you telling me, you know? And he's like, I think you should go for it. I'm like, no, there's no way. Like, they're not going to want me. I'm 2 years in. I don't know what I'm doing. And he's like, well, you know, just go. I think he asked, you know, are you thinking about doing it in the future? I'm like, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm enjoying what I've done the past couple of years. And why don't you just go do it for interview experience? So I did, and I remember getting that call from Ken Jokums. I was driving. I had to pull over because I was shocked. And, you know, I can't thank Ken enough, and just an awesome guy, and taking a chance on, you know, 22-year-old me with limited experience. And You know, so I got that role, and, you know, going back to the question, it was right away. It's like, okay, 22, never been a head coach. Here we go. And you got to start figuring things out. And I think it was reflecting back on all those things. It was, you know, going back to T-Bird camp. It was going back to, you know, my experience at Ohio Wesleyan and what was valuable to me. It was, you know, how Coach Davis wanted to go about things, you know. And yes, him and Coach DeWitt, I think, were very different. Coach DeWitt, you know, one thing about Coach DeWitt, and I still, how does he go about that? He gives you so much freedom on and off the floor. You know, he expects you to hold yourself accountable and do what you need to do off the floor to, you know, be successful as a player and as a program. And on the floor, he gave us a lot of freedom to do things as well. I guess when you have a couple All-American point guards, you can get away with that. And I quickly figured out, you know, at Ada, I didn't have Andy Winters to just go out and, you know, run the show. But, yeah, I mean, right away, and I think I was very fortunate in the sense as well. I had a guy like Rick Sherrick that had been doing it, you know, a long time. He was a longtime head coach. He was athletic director. He understood and knew things that I did not. Like you said earlier, you know, I thought I was coming in. I thought I understood, like, you know, what I want us to look like, which is very much my experience how I was, and being close and connected and playing for each other and not really caring who gets the credit. And I thought I was okay from an X and O standpoint, but I had no idea of all the other stuff. That's where Rick came into the picture and, you know, helping me, being organized and, you know, being on top of me. Hey, did you think about this? And at that time, I'm like, no, because I didn't even know that was something I had to do as a head coach. But, you know, having guys like Rick and, you know, also Jacob as well, I was fortunate to get him, you know, best friend of mine. I think that went a long way for me, having relationships with those guys. And I think that's, you know, I think Jacob and I were able to set kind of an example, you know, as coaches, as a staff in the office, that we wanted to translate on the floor, you know, being best friends and, you know, doing everything together. And that's how we wanted our teams to play as well. And I think some of the players were able to catch on to that. I think that went a long way. But yeah, you do have to start piecing things together, you know, fairly quickly. I think the one thing that I found out, I think what a lot of young coaches find out, it's, you know, okay, this worked for Coach DeWitt. You try to model that, but if it's not you and what you, who you are, it's not going to work. You know, there's so many great coaches in this area. I found that out very quickly as well. You know, getting that job, it's like, holy cow, there is a lot of really, really good coaches in this area. But you got to find what you want to do. And, you know, although, you know, like I said, Coach DeWitt, how he approaches things, just kind of being hands off and tons of freedom, you know, I've kind of found I'm a little bit more of the opposite. I like to control things a little bit more on the floor, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it takes some time. It took me some time. It's something I still evaluate after every year. When I go back and look at, you know, what's working and what's not as well. So,
well, why don't we go ahead and we got a couple minutes here. Let's go ahead and take the break that we need to take. And then after the break, we'll talk about maybe that time that you spent as the head coach at Ada High School in some more specifics. And then also, you know, the transition to end up where you are. You had some what I like to call in between time there for a little bit. We'll chat about that. And I really, it's interesting to me because when you start so young, you're kind of drinking from a fire hose, and you got to be able to take whatever you're drinking from the fire hose and kind of remember what it tasted like so that you can apply it to where you're going next. And we'll chat about that right after this break. I just want to take a quick second and interrupt the podcast for a minute to remind you that our new platform for the podcast is Spotify for Podcasters. And if you're listening on Spotify, you have an opportunity to make a donation to the podcast if you would be inclined to do so. Thanks for considering any sort of donation. One time, monthly, or other regular donations are certainly welcome. Spotify for Podcasters is our platform, and they're providing an easy option for you to do so just by clicking the link at the end of the episode. Thanks for your consideration. And now back to the podcast. So you had mentioned putting together your staff at Ada, and you describe it as very fortunate, and I think sometimes that's the way life has to work. There's no one ever refers to their bad luck as it was good for me, although sometimes it is. But when you are fortunate to have an opportunity because you have a relationship with Jacob Sherrick and Jacob's dad is Rick, I don't know how familiar you are with Don Meyer. The late Don Meyer used to say all the time about building a staff that he thought it was really important. And he used biblical references. He said, you need a Paul, a guy that's been there, done that, experienced everything. And you need a Timothy, a guy that wants to go do that, be there and experience everything. And that's how you build around yourself as a coach. And you had like a built-in Paul and Timothy situation with Rick and Jake. And so when you get to a place like Ada, talk about the program you inherited and a little bit about what your vision was for how you wanted to make it your program.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're exactly right. And throughout my career, I've been really fortunate to have really, really good assistants. I mean, besides Jacob and Rick, and I have Matt right now, I've been super, super fortunate. But first and foremost, I remember reaching out to Rick, or having Rick as somebody in mind, and the idea of him putting on purple instead of blue, I'm like, I don't know how this phone call is going to go. But once I was able to get Jacob on board, I thought I had a chance. And how lucky was I, being someone that, was just getting started, the situation we were going to get into, and having a guy like Rick. But, going into, so get the Ada job, going into a situation, what excited me about Ada is, not long before that, they've seen a ton of success. I believe it was 2009, made it to state tournament, and taking over for a guy like Chris, who have a ton of respect for and has been at it for quite some time, done some great things at Ada. So knew from conversation and being around at nearby Allen East, knew that going to be a little bit down from a talent perspective. But the thing that excited me was the recent success that they had seen and taken over for a guy like Chris. So getting to Ada, it was exactly that. And, I think when you start to get in coaching, I think very rarely does it go as you hope, as you plan, as scripted. And we had some injuries that did not help matters that first year. Best player, point guard, goes down. I believe it was our last scrimmage before the first game of the year. So then you're like, okay, what now? So that took its toll as well. But, I think what we wanted to do early on, we knew we were down from a talent perspective. We talked about brotherhood a bunch and what that meant. And I think what we really wanted to do is just get our guys to compete. I think that may be cliche and something every coach says. And I think what we really wanted to do is try to get the kids to feel a sense of accomplishment from just playing hard and playing together. And I think when you can play that way, you can get the kids to buy into a little bit of what you're trying to tell them, what you're trying to do. Once they see that accomplishment, those that are around the program, I think, also can buy into that brand of basketball and, okay, these kids are committed, they're playing hard, they're playing together. And I think that's what we were able to do. My first year, Ada, I believe we had 4 wins. I went to 6 wins, 6 wins, I believe 10 wins. And so it took some time. But I think that was the key for us. And what we were trying to do is get them to play the right way, get them, to invest in each other. That's a lot about what, the brotherhood is. Yes, we want to have each other's back and, be connected on and off the floor, but really just an investment in yourself, become a better version, a better player. That's going to essentially make the team better, make the program better. I think we were able to do that. Something that we were kind of proud of walking away from that situation.
Well, and you use some phraseology that I really like, because I think one of the most overused phrases in our culture today, culture might be an overused phrase, but one of the most overused phrases in the basketball culture, maybe in American culture, is buy-in. And I've not heard you talk about buy-in, because I have heard you say now multiple times, we're trying to get investment in. And look, it may be semantics. I don't care. There's a difference between trying to sell somebody something and get them to buy it, or trying to present something to somebody that they will invest in and realize the benefit from. And you've never really talked about buy-in as much as you've talked about getting guys to invest.
And from one thing that I struggled with early on you know, being that first year coach and being 22 years old, I wanted to get that buy-in. I wanted to get that investment from guys. And I feel like I had to get to know them a little bit. I wanted to, connect with them, which was a struggle for me early on. I was 22 years old and I had kids that are 18.
If I might, you almost need them to think you're 30.
I didn't want them to think that, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, you almost need them so that they don't realize that we're not that far apart in age.
Right.
I mean, that's one thing I remember several players that played for me after my first stint at 8 to 20 plus, 5 plus years ago was now they'll say, were you really only 23? Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a fine line, that. And I say that, you know, I was 22 and the kids were 18, but I also had Jacob that I believe was 19.
Yes.
trying to tell the 18-year-olds, you know, that was a fine line for us. And I think in some areas we use that to our advantage because we could connect with them and try to get them, again, to, I guess, buy in. There's a trust there. You know, you want them. Your first year head coach, you're young. You know, some of them, why should I trust this guy? Does he have any clue what he is doing? So I think we were able to do that, use our age a little bit to connect with the guys, to establish some things, to get them excited. I think that's a big thing. You know, once you're starting a program, I think if you can get them excited, they're going to compete a little bit. Once they compete a little bit, you know, they're going to see some of that success, that accomplishment of, hey, we can do this a little bit. I think that's something that we try to generate or try to do right off, to generate some excitement. But, you know, going back to the other side of that, we also struggle with that. You know, I got 19-year-old Jacob, 22-year-old me, with 18-year-olds, and some of those saw us as buddies and not as, coaches and someone trying to, you know, lead them and get them to, you know, back to where we wanted the program to get to. So that, we went back and forth with that. That was a challenge for us a little bit. And, you know, that was, again, us relying on Rick. A lot on how we handle some of these things.
And so something I would like you to touch on, because one of the things about your approach to all of it that impressed me from, I won't say 30,000 feet, because I was a little closer than that. I had a son in the program and it was involved in your first year at the school. But from the outside looking in, a lot of 22-year-old guys can get a coaching job. Not a lot of 22-year-old guys are going to look at that first job as, this is my career. I'm going to make this as good as they're looking for what's next. And I was always kind of impressed by it. Never appeared to me as though you were planning in any way about what the next job might look like or what opportunities you could be creating for yourself. Yeah. You're just building a program.
Yeah. I think I was just so focused on, there was never, I don't think, a thought of elsewhere at that point or, you know, the next step, a quote unquote bigger step. You know, fell in love with the kids I had, wanted to get the most out of them. I think that's still my philosophy, you know, to this day, is I want to give as much as I can because I think the kids deserve it, and that's what I want to get from them. So, that was my focus. I wanted to improve every year, and I think we, you know, from a wins and losses standpoint aside, I think we were able to do that. And I think the other big thing for me, you know, and I've said this in every interview I've been in, I tell the kids this every year, you know, very much so. I kind of care less from a wins and losses standpoint. You know, I want to connect with those guys. I want to build some relationships with the guys. And that's the takeaway from me. Some of those same kids that we talk about, you know, when you and I were connected at Ada, you know, starting to get, you know, texts from them. Hey, you know, I got engaged. Hey, I got, you know, my wedding's coming up. Or, hey, coach, how we doing? A Merry Christmas text, you know, around the holidays. Those are things that, you know, are huge to me. And I think that's, I think our staff has made that a priority enough to get to know the kids. And I think that is seen by some of those guys. I think that goes back to that buy-in. And I think once you're able to do some of those things and connect and establish some of those relationships, I think a lot of the wins and losses standpoints or wins and losses will kind of take care of itself. Now there's some other things, you know, talent and things like that definitely factor in. And trust me, I get that. I think that's always been huge for me in where I've been.
Well, when you got the job at Ada, you were not there very long before you, you know, you kind of had identified, we got a good class, a pretty good class. That eighth grade class, your first year, was a class that you felt like if you get things in place and you build towards something, that might be the class that can make it pay off. So I'm not trying to tear off any old Band-Aids or any scabs, but when you've invested 3+ years into a place, and for people who don't know, I mean, you're on the verge of a chance to see the culmination of 4 years worth of really hard work, and some guys start leaving and things kind of unravel a little bit.
Yeah.
And ultimately you don't stay at ADA. And again, I you don't have to talk about anything you're not comfortable with, but if you wouldn't mind just sharing kind of what you watched happen, how you processed it, and ultimately what led to what became the next step for you.
Well, it was tough. You know, it was just one of those unfortunate circumstances where some things happened. And you know, like you said, we had some kids leave, and you know, it was tough. And like you said, you know, we were 4 years in, we went from 4 wins to six to 10. And I think going into that year, maybe I was, maybe it was just me, but I thought we had a chance to be pretty special that year. You know, and I thought we could compete at the top of the league, which wasn't something that we were able to do those first 4 years. I thought we could get to 12, 15 wins. And, you know, when, like you said, you had this vision of those guys that we saw through as eighth graders and pouring everything into them. And you also saw those guys pour into you and the program as well. When that didn't come to fruition, it was a challenge. I mean, I was still young at that standpoint, and whether I made the right decision or not, I don't know. I go back to that, you know, quite a bit. And, you know, and I understood the, I guess, the impact of whatever decision I was to make. You know, there was some guys in the program I cared for mightily, and still do. And, you know, I understood, you know, what that meant for those guys. But I thought for me at that time, that was the best decision for me. Like I said, I think it was a tough decision. I always question if that was the right decision. I think as I've gotten older, whether it's been basketball or life, you know, something I always ask myself is, you know, if I were in the same position again, would I make a different decision? And I'm not sure I would. So I think I can be at peace with that. And it was a really unfortunate situation, and it was a strange situation. You know, I still connect with a lot of those guys. And that's, I think, the thing that still have relationships with those guys. That's what means the most to me. But it was a difficult and a challenging situation. You know, just been really fortunate to kind of get back into it and have a next chapter as well.
Well, and certainly, and I always, I think in life as relates to basketball and where they intersect, everybody has those experiences that aren't basketball related, or maybe are secondary to basketball or ancillary to basketball, but they always kind of create an impact. So I call it in between times. I mean, I, you know, if you have in between time where you're not doing the thing that you love the way that you want to do it, or you're not at the position that you were, and my brother's fond of saying, don't waste your low point. You know, when things are down and things aren't great, there's something to be gained from it. Don't let it get by without gaining something. Don't waste it. Your in between time, that would have been that 2020, 2021 basketball season. Talk a little bit about how you approached it, what your mindset was, and what you gained from it.
Yeah, it was a challenge to step away from it, and I was like, well, now what? And I was really, it gave me some time to reflect. It gave me some time to, you know, what were my takeaways from that? Like you said, to learn from it. You know, and I was also, you know, something most people don't know is during that time, I was fortunate that season, which was the COVID season, which ended up being a crazy time for all of us. But Coach Williams called over at UNOH and said, hey, you know, right after the news broke over at ADA, and said, hey, would you be interested in just coming to help out? Because I don't really know what that looks like. So I can't really pay you anything at this point. But he's like, man, I'd love to have you on board. And I talked over with my wife and, you know, what that meant. And, you know, we had a little man involved as well. I knew it came with a lot of travel, and more so than at the high school level. And I was one of the best. That's one of the best things I think that I did. I'm not sure Coach Williams even knows that, but seeing basketball at that level again, you know, that was a rough year for us over at UNOH as well. And, you know, a lot of unfortunate injury things and, you know, variables that factored in there. But I was able to go and observing Coach Williams, man, he worked his butt off. I mean, and I admired that from him. And I was able to take some things away, X's and O's, yes, but just how he approached things, his mindset on things, and things that I probably haven't done even a good job of letting him know that I've taken away and stolen from him. the offense that we've ran the past 2 years is very much what he was doing over there as well. But yeah, it was a time, you know, I was able to, it ended up being a positive for me, I think. And I think it's helped me to where I've been the past couple of years.
Well, I know the in-between time wasn't an easy time for you. And you and I obviously had some communication during that time because that's how our paths crossed for about the fourth time. But I'm not going to get into that. I do know that at the end of that time, at the end of the 2020 and 21 season, at the end of that, you know, you clearly want to be a coach.
Yeah.
And it's not a guarantee that opportunities are going to present themselves. And when they do, even at a young age, can you talk about maybe evaluating what opportunities were worth it for you, what opportunities weren't worth it? Were you looking hard, or was it more of a as long as it's within reason, driving distance and things like that? I mean, you're obviously not a teacher, not in the building every day. How did you process and prepare for trying to decide what that next step was going to be?
Yeah, so after that year with UNOH, I told Coach Williams, if you'd have me again, I'd love to be a part of it again. At that time, that was my plan. You know, you never know what opportunities are going to come up in coaching. You never know what's coming open. And at that time, I had no idea the USD job was going to come open. I had no clue. And when it did, and I had a couple reach out, say, hey, are you interested? It was interesting because, you know, coming from a school, Ada, with big kind of a rivalry game, and some of my Ada kids still give me crap. You never seem like, you know, that game we always played and this, that, and the other. But it was one of those things. Yeah, and it was enticing. But like you said, there's so many other pieces go to it. And for me, you know, like you said, not in education. At that time, I had a career. I guess I had a new role at my profession, at my job, and that's got to be first for me. You know, coaching don't pay the bills. I'd love for it to, and you know, I was starting a family at that point, and you know, I needed to make that a priority along with my profession. And yeah, it had to make sense for me. And again, this is one of those jobs I think I never saw. I would have never foreseen me here or taking it. Or, you know, it's a little bit of a commute for me. But it's worked out. And the last couple of years have been awesome. And you know, super thankful for the opportunity that came up. But yeah, I mean, going back to there's so many other things that go back into it that it's got to be the right situation. And I think there's been some other situations, other opportunities that came up that just haven't been the right fit and the right situation for me at that time.
So when you start looking into the Upper Soda Valley High School job, and like you said, it's a next door neighbor kind of rivalry with Ada, not a rivalry that you were born into, but one that you became very familiar with.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier on when the Ada job came open and you were encouraged by Coach Koontz, man, even if it's just for the interview experience, go take that shot. When you first put yourself out there in a situation like the USV job, is it fair to say maybe you're not 100% sure you really want it, but you got to go, you're learning as much as you're introducing yourself to them?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, I wanted to get back into, I miss the connection with the kids. I missed the coaching part of it. And, you know, if I could find a good fit, wherever that was, I needed that piece back. You know, something about me, and I think that's unique, is, you know, whether it's been coaching, whether it's been my, you know, my career for 10 years, and I've always been in like a service-based career. I was at the Lima Family YMCA, you know, community-based organization. I was at Goodwill Easter Seals working with at-risk, you know, youth within the community. Currently at the Area Agency on Aging, working with the opposite end, the aging population. But again, the community-based organization, the service-oriented approach, the passion for helping others and giving back has kind of been my calling. And I miss that piece of it. I miss the basketball piece of it as well. But I knew I knew I needed to get that back. And you know, when that came, and the interesting thing about USB when it came open, you know, the other piece of, you know, basketball for me is, you know, Team 419 that we've been doing for 9 or 10 years now, an AAU program. And it just so happened I had, I believe that year, four of those USB kids that were already playing with us. So I knew those kids. I knew they were awesome kids. They're super talented, but they're great, great kids, and they're hard workers. And they end up having a heck of a careers here. And so that, already knowing those kids and who they were, and knowing some of the you know, administration here at USB had a big piece of it. But you know, knowing those guys and having a spring working with those guys in travel ball, and you know, already building relationships with them, it made sense. And
describe the program then. You talked about taking over at Ada after an established head coach with a good tenure. Very similar circumstance at Upper South Valley. The program that you inherited and what you saw as maybe, from a priority standpoint, most important thing to get done early.
Well, you know, when I got to USB, expectations were high. We had a team that was really, really talented. And you know, we ended up winning 20 games that year. But you know, as far as what we wanted to accomplish right away, you know, we talked a lot early on how to handle those expectations, because if I was here, I know the kids were here. So we addressed that a bunch, and you know, that was a heck of a group. And you know, it was an interesting season for us, and you know, probably one of the more interesting seasons I've had, because you know, I think we were 20-4 that year, which is a heck of a year. Not many teams, you know, get to that 20 win standpoint. But when we look back at it, it was, you know, we didn't walk away with a conference title. We lost one conference game that year to a really, really good Perry team, and we got bounced in sectionals by a really, really talented Spencerville team. So we look back on it, and it was like, okay, you know, what did we have to show for that, really? And that was, I remember after we lost that Perry game, we had a film session soon after, and it was just different. You know, the guys, and this hadn't been this was not common for them at all. Just no energy, just wasn't quite sure if they wanted to be there. And that was tough for us, because, you know, we focused so much on, you know, that was a goal of ours. And that Perry game after that didn't work out for us. You know, I remember one of our seniors asked me, he goes, we're just not quite sure, you know, we're just not quite sure how to respond or what we're playing for now. And that was a challenge to handle. So, you know, for me, you know, from Ada to USB, it was two different circumstances, you know. So, you know, going back into, you know, the right away was how to handle those types of things. And again, and I think that goes back to, you know, what we refer to as, you know, the brotherhood, relying on each other, trusting each other, and you know, going through those times together on how to handle some of that stuff.
It is remarkable how different the challenge is, I think, in coaching when you're trying to get, let's say, hey, we've had 5 or 6 wins, we'd really like to get to 500. That's a different challenge than, hey, we're capable of winning 20, and we'd really like to cut down a net.
Yeah.
But both of those things are predicated on having an approach that, like you said early in the podcast, is we're not talking about wins and losses very much. We're not going to talk about them. That's not going to be our focus.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, what's your philosophy, strategy? How do you go about trying to make sure it's about the work and about the process and not so much putting all of your energy and emotion and attaching it to the outcome?
Yeah, and every day. I mean, really, we have core values, and process over outcome is one of those five that we talk about every single day. And I tell the guys, and that was that difficult part with that 20-win team, is I told them, you know, just every day, focus on the process, what we need to do, work your butt off, come in here with the right mindset, be together, do all these things, and it's going to take care of itself. So when it, you know, and again, I've never been one to really base success on wins and losses. I want to maximize whatever group that we have. But when that didn't, I felt like those guys did do everything. They did focus on the process, and they didn't get that outcome that they wanted. That was challenging for me as a coach on how to respond to that. But, you know, going back to, you know, how we go about that, really just every single day, you know, just preaching that. And I try to get guys to, you know, live in the moment as well, you know, enjoy you know, every practice, every game, every skill session that you get, because it goes by fast, you know, and being obviously in my playing days, I could relate to them a little bit in that you know, aspect, but just trying to get them to be present, you know, live now and enjoy your high school days. And, you know, I think sometimes we get so wrapped up in that outcome. And I think, you know, going back to my time in Ohio West, you know, again, I always reflect back to that. But, you know, that team I had my junior year as well, I said, you know, we lost to Cabrini, and that wasn't the outcome that we expected either. You know, we thought if we got that game, we could have made it to the Final Four or beyond as well. But I think what we walked away from that was what we have today, and that's still a bond, that's still, you know, being a part of a coaching fraternity where we can bounce things back and forth from each other, have that relationship. And that's kind of what I hope the guys in the program walk away with, is that same sort of chemistry and that bond. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that, I feel. So.
All right, so you're starting year three with your quote-unquote new program. Things are pretty well entrenched. I think you've had a lot of investment from the guys. I know you've had a lot of investment from the community. You and I talked about taking over a job where there's high expectations. I made a joke with you at the time that you applied for the job that, hey, the guy that's not there anymore won, I think, 80% of his total games and 78% of his league games. If you win 78 and 76, are you in trouble? Because that's hard to do. But as you work through the small school scenario, you know that the talent level is not always going to be the same. So you are in a time where you took over a program with remarkable talent, still some very good athletes, but numbers aren't huge at a school this size. They never will be. When you look at year three and what's in front of you, I guess reflect on two things for me. One, where are your guys in buying into the brotherhood piece of this thing, and how does it show up? And then what does that create for you as far as your focus going into year three?
Yeah, you know, as far as where the guys are, I think, you know, year one, it's hard to get all that. It's hard to get all that in 1 year, even with the kind of guys that we had. I think at the end of last year, it really started to click. And we've had exceptional leaders and seniors and guys, you know, like last year. You know, when your seniors start to hold, when you start to hear some of your seniors saying some of the things that you've maybe said for a year and a half to some of your younger guys, and holding those younger guys to the holding them accountable and to the level, a standard of what you're expecting, I think things are starting to work a little bit. I think that's where we got to last year. And you know, we had a really good year last year, and I give a lot of credit to our guys for that, and not just our seniors last year, but the seniors prior to. And I think, you know, leading into the next question, we are going to have a lot of that going into year three. I think when someone's going to look at us going into this year, we graduate a ton. We graduate, you know, conference player of the year. We graduated an all-state guy. We graduated, you know, a group of four seniors that did a ton for us. So I think, you know, quote unquote on paper, or, you know, from the outside looking in, you know, I think some are going to view us as a little bit of a down year. But I think I'm excited for this year, and the fact that some of those young guys that are now, well, were young guys that are going to step into bigger shoes, bigger roles this year, they had tremendous leaders in front of them. And I think, you know, the culture here, and this is kind of the small school, you know, those guys do everything together, and some of that starts to bleed through. And they've seen, you know, I think the sacrifice, the investment, what worked with some of those older guys. I hope that carries through to some of them as they're going to have to take bigger steps. I think if we can get that in, I think we'll be at again. I think it may take us some time this year as the first few games, or, you know, the first half of the season. But I do think, and I think a coach, you always want your team playing the best basketball at the end of the year or towards the end of the year. I think that could be very much so the case with us, because although I got two guys coming back with a ton of experience. I have some other guys that don't have a lot of experience at all. So if we get some of those younger guys, some of that experience, and rely on those two to bring them along, and some of the things that they've seen, we're going to have one senior this year. That's going to be, a guy that has played a ton of minutes in the 2 years I've been here. He also plays in the summer with me as well, so I'm around him a bunch. He can kind of translate and help some of those expectations, some of those things that I think he has seen that contribute to the success that we want to be at and getting that to those young guys. So it's going to be a fun year. Like I said, some young guys. I think early on, some growing pains will be had, but we'll see where we're at the end of the year.
Now, you've made a couple of references to your summer program. You are the director of Team 419 on the boys' side of things. I believe we talked a little bit earlier. You started actually on the girls' side of Team 419 with AAU. Now you're on the boys' side as a director. There's no way to ask this question and not sound like a horse's ass, and I'm not trying to. But when you know what the all-consuming nature of coaching is, when you understand, like you do, that building a program is an all-inclusive term, and it is all-inclusive in terms of what it takes to do it, what's your motivation for, and how do you find balance to get into the summer and do what it takes to run a quality AAU program?
It's a challenge. I'd love to hear my wife answer that question.
Well, I had it strongly suggested by one of my former podcast guests. Dave Fralick said the next step, if we're going to do basketball in life, is he said basketball wives need to be on a pod or two.
Yeah, I mean, every year. So, going back to Team 419, I think we're going our 9th or 10th year. I'm going my 10th year of coaching, and I think I've been doing it about as long as I've been coaching. But I think every year I go in – you start gearing up for AAU season midway through probably your high school season. I think every year it's like, am I going to do this again? Am I going to do it this, and ask my wife, should we do this again? And cause it's a lot. I mean, really, you look at September and October, your preseason stuff, your school team, November through March is school ball. And then, March, April, May is AAU stuff. And then June, you start, you have your shootouts and things. So, I think every year I ask that question, and there's been a couple of years where I just don't know if I can do it. And again, for multiple reasons, family, for my job and career, also because, like you said, your high school program, is going to be your priority, and that's all inclusive. You want to make sure you're giving it your all as well. But I think every year that I've had that question in the back of my mind, I think every year we've actually grown instead of cutting it back. We started it, like you said, on the girls' side. We had one girls' team, worked really, really well. Had some really special players on that team. And it's like, hey, let's go to two girls' teams. And we did. And we went to three girls' teams. And then I got the coach on the boys' side. And I was like, well, why aren't we doing this on the boys' side? So then we had our girls' side and our boys' side. We had about two or three teams each. And then COVID happened. We shut it down. And then I think every year since, our boys and our girls program, we've had four or five teams on our girls' side this year. And then this year on our boys' side was our biggest year yet. We had six teams and 66 kids. Going back to the question, why I continue to do that? Again, I love the AAU piece of it where we got 66 kids. We had grades 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 7th on up. I love getting them together and the spring. We have a lot of small school kids. And the part I love about AAU is I got a lot of these small school kids. We go to these bigger tournaments, big cities, and see these big teams. And, we compete. And, I get a kick out of doing that. But also, what's a lot of fun, when you get to the school season, you can compete against those guys. And that's a lot of fun. Just seeing those guys, how they progress. And we've been really fortunate. We've had some kids that have been with 419 their 4 years of high school. So to see them from freshmen to seniors is a lot of fun. It's also a lot of fun for the guys. Like I said, I got several of my guys here at USB that play 419. And then they see teammates or, throughout the year, so that's a high for them as well. So I don't know. I guess I just enjoy it. I enjoy it. And the part now, I don't want to say it's getting a little bit easier. My wife might disagree with me on that part of it as well. But I got a little man now, and he just turned 5, and he's starting to be a lot more involved in some of that stuff. And he's able to go to practices now. He's able to travel, you know, when I'm, you know, on the road for 419 and do those types of things. And, you know, seeing him be a part of it, he's also a big part of, you know, with the high school kids. You know, Connor Sanders and Drew Stevens are like LeBron James in our household. It's crazy. And, you know, love Drew, love Connor, but, you know, during the season, November and March, you know, I see them, I think, more than I see him. And then I come home and all I hear about is Drew and Connor some more. So there's that piece of it as well. You know, I think it's coming full circle. You know, the guys that when I was in his shoes, and, you know, looking through my eyes, the Jamar Butlers, the Travis Waltons, I just thought the world of, and traveling around. And I remember, you know, going to all those all-star games and all their, their high school games, chasing down autographs and things like that. And now seeing him kind of doing the same thing, you know, seeing guys, you know, that I coach through that same lens, that's been pretty special for me.
It sounds like what you're saying is that, and you mentioned your wife a couple times, now you've mentioned your son. It sounds like they are a part of your basketball journey. They're not outside of it. They're not necessarily waist deep in it, but they are a part of it. Because I ask the question all the time, and I will more now that we've kind of shifted the focus of the podcast, ways that you go about creating a balance when you have a 10 or 11 month a year high school program, and you fill in the gap with the AAU program. You've got a career that you mentioned. We were talking before we started recording. You just came back from Salt Lake City. I mean, you have to travel at times for your work, and you're also all around the Lima area for your work. What's your approach, or how do you feel like you are successful about maintaining or creating some level of balance?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, my wife's a rock star, and she was a former student athlete. She played volleyball at High Wells, and that's where we met. So she understands that side of it as she walked that path as well, being a student athlete, seeing the investment. And she supports me in my passion. So that's a huge piece of it. And the balance, it's a struggle. You know, it really, really is. And it's something I struggled with mightily early on because, you know, and, you know, going back to my days at ADA, you know, again, I didn't see anything else but Ada, and I wanted to, you know, get that turnaround, and I wanted to see success with those guys, and I was going to do everything I could to make that happen until it happened. And you do that, but at the same time, you know, there was no balance there for me at that point. You know, I was all in here, and, you know, I probably wasn't the best, I think, fiance at that point and person to be around. And I give, and I still will, and we still have this conversation, full credit to Rick Sherritt there. Because, you know, early on, I think he sent some of that, and I remember him pulling me aside, and I think we were sitting in the office at ADA, and I was upset about who knows what bad practice or things didn't go as expected in the game, who knows. But I remember he looked at me and goes, "You can't take this home." And at that time, I'm like, "What? You know, we just lost, or, you know, well, what are we going to do? We have bad practice, we'll play tomorrow. What are we going to do? Like, we got to, you can't take it home." And I remember driving home after that, and that's something that stuck with me ever since. And, you know, once, if we do have a bad day, you know, on that drive home, that repeats in my head, you can't take it home, you can't take it home. And, you know, I think I've been a lot better since then at home. And, you know, one thing I do enjoy about USC, yeah, it's a little bit of a commute for me, but also I enjoy that.
That's a nice buffer.
Yeah, it's a huge buffer for me. You know, from my office to here, it's about 35, 40 minutes, and from home, it's about 30 minutes. But that's 30 minutes where I can let go everything, whether it was good or bad, and leave it somewhere between here and home, and try to get home and be a husband, be a dad. Because, you know, let's face it, when I go home, whether we've won by 30 or lost by 30, my son, he doesn't care. Like, we're going home, we're playing, or something's got to happen. He doesn't care. Now, that's great. Early on in my career, I didn't understand that, but it is a challenge. It's a challenge with the family. It's also a challenge, I think, for me, you know, not being in education and my profession, and then this coaching being very separate but together at the same time. But I think it goes back to, you know, it's something I'm constantly working on. But I also give, you know, my wife, and she's gotten better at also picking and choosing when to. if I didn't do a great job,
when to remind you of some things
of living at home, when and how to approach me, and those types of things. But it's something that, you know, we've worked on, and
I will probably end up saying this in most of the podcasts going forward, because when you get a nugget that you can't let go of, it's obviously very good. But I did a podcast recently with Neil Young over at Ohio Northern University, and he said in response to that question that he and his wife have learned to accept that balance isn't real, and that what you have to really strive for is appropriate imbalance. And the calendar creates some of that. I mean, the calendar is going to create some imbalance, and you manage the imbalance and you make sure it's not inappropriate. I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
This is a little out of order. I didn't give you a chance to touch on something, but I wanted to. We talked about how fortunate you were to have a staff in your first job that had that veteran and that young aspiring coach in Rick and Jacob, respectively. You get here to USV, and look, when you sent me the picture driving away from here with your new USV quarter zip on, my first thought was, how the hell is he going to hire assistant coaches at that place? He doesn't know anybody. So your staff here and where you are with that, and how it compares to the circumstance, or not compares to, how it might reflect what you experienced in your first job as well.
I got lucky again. Really? I did. I mean, just happened to, it's just one of those, it timed up correctly. You know, you're right. When I got this job, you know, a lot of times you want to go into interviews and have sort of an idea of, you know, presenting a staff or who you have in mind. And I left and I'm like, recruiting McGuffey is going to be a little bit of a challenge for me. And, just happened, with Matt that, you know, I knew he was close by, that he probably wanted to get into coaching again. It made sense, and I didn't waste too much time at all before making that phone call. And, you know, have somebody like him again, another veteran. You know, he was a long-time head coach at Kenton, I believe over 10 years. And being able to snag him, just lucky. But also just able to support with young, energetic guys as well, which I think is important. And it's also important, you know, going back to that balance, having some of those younger, energetic guys that maybe don't have to worry so much about the balance side of it yet. They don't have the family. They don't have the kids.
Yeah.
Because it's so much, it's all the other stuff. It's the skill session. It's opening up in the morning. And you have to do those things, you know, to do the things you want as a program, but also at the same time, that impacts that balance. So, you know, I'm able to have a longtime friend of mine that also coached with me at Ada. He's actually a Lima guy. He's got quite the commute out here as well, but he's a younger, energetic guy that's able to take some of that off of me. And then with Micah as well, he's this spring, anytime I've drove here in the spring, and for whatever reason, whether it's just coming out here to get some work done, dropping stuff off, coming to the office, that car is always here. He's always doing some sort of skill stuff whether it's our AAU guys, whether it's USV guys. Again, that takes so much off of, you know, me as well from a balance standpoint. So again, I've been really, really lucky. I think I'm going like 10 years. I think this will be 7, I believe, as a head coach, and I've just been really fortunate, blessed with the guys that I've had around me.
Well, I've mentioned before, and I'm not trying to blow smoke, but I've mentioned before about the things that were atypical about you as a young coach that I think still are, because you're still a relatively young guy, particularly in a head coaching ranks. It would be challenging for a lot of coaches to be able to give assistant coaches that much of a voice, and to put trust into them to be, quote unquote, doing it the right way. A lot of coaches have a hard time letting go of pieces of their program or delegating it,
yeah,
and being comfortable with it. You don't appear to struggle in that way at all.
No, and that's, in all honesty, that's something I evaluate myself on at the conclusion of every year. Is, you know, I want to mentor, well, and I don't know how much mentoring I could have done for Rick. You know, he was more mentoring me. But I always, you know, did I do a good job with my assistants? Did I set an example? I want those guys, and I think I got a couple of young guys that maybe head coaching is in their, in the plans for the future. You know, am I doing a good job helping them to get to that point? I think in order to, push them along that path, I got to delegate and give them some responsibilities as well. Delegation is something, and also then every year I kind of set personal goals for myself. Delegation is actually one of them. And it's funny that you brought that up, because early on, I don't think I did a good job of that. But as I, going into year seven, as I look back, I think you gotta have some of that. I can't do it all myself. It's not gonna work. You gotta start delegating some of that. We're only gonna be better once we start doing that. Those young guys, Clay and Mike, I fully trust them. And again, it goes back into the, I've just been fortunate. And some of that trust comes with, or some of that delegation comes with the trust. I've known my JV coach. We were high school teammates. We've been, friends ever since. So we have that bond, that friendship outside, that I have full trust in him, that he's going to give me everything he's got. I don't have to worry about anything. With Micah, who's helped in a couple different, positions since he's been helping out. He played for me, so he knows expectations. He knows, what's going to fire me up, the standard. He understands all those types of things. And at his age, he has a different relationship with the players, which I think is okay. Some of your assistants are going to have a different relationship with the players, and I think Micah is one of those. He's able to connect in a different way than, maybe the head coach. That's fine. But he's also able to translate a lot of those things. Sometimes it's without me even knowing it, and some of those I don't find out till after. And Drew just graduating is a great example. He reflects on some of those things. Coach Cook said this and this in timeout, and I was getting ready to do this, and so he has that understanding. We've been through those same kind of battles and experiences where he can, whether he knows he's doing it or not. So that's made it really easy for me to, like you said, delegate and trust and put a lot more into those guys' hands.
Well, the podcast is Basketball and Life, which means we're going to talk a lot about the life side, which we did for this. And I'm not going to keep you, out of respect for your time. We could do this a lot longer. One of these days, we'll sit back down and get into some X's and O's stuff, because yeah, I would really like to find a way to get into that, and also maybe revisit some other topics that pertain to your coaching style. But I told you I'd try to keep it to an hour, to an hour and a half, and we're probably over an hour and a half by now. So I appreciate your time, and we'll hopefully catch up again soon, but I'm quite certain I'll see you this fall.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Coach.
Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in and checking this one out. If you're listening on Spotify, courtesy of our platform, Spotify for Podcasters, you have the opportunity to make a donation to the podcast. If you would be inclined to do so, there's a link at the bottom of the episode that will allow you to make your donation in whatever amount you would choose to do so. If you're listening on any other platform, I just ask that you please rate, review, and subscribe, and come back anytime to check out more episodes here on the Basketball and Life Podcast.